Hey, gang, listen up. Are you in a band in Austin? And you're trying to get your thing together and you're working it out in your garage or your apartment or your house and people are complaining and it's starting to get hot and muggy? Well, let me tell you about Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. You can find them at spaceatx.com or call them at 512-448-9518. Take the talent train from Schmoesville to Protown. Get out of the heat and start rehearsing at Space.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Singer, songwriter, Sally Allen is here. She's got a new album out called 8-Track Sessions. It's absolutely fantastic. It's one of those albums where someone sits down with like an 8-track by themselves and has a weird drum machine, maybe invites a friend over every once in a while to do something crazy on a piano, and then makes an album. With like these weird okay, I'm not going to have more than 8 tracks. I've got this microphone and I've got this weird drum machine. And so I'm going to make, an album like that. And she did. She made an incredible album. It was mixed by George Reef. Great, great dude. And anyway, this album's called 8-Track Sessions. You can find it at iTunes. You can find it at sallyallenmusic.com. You can find it on Spotify. She's absolutely amazing. You might know her from... being one of the Shiny Soul Sisters. That's right, one of the backup singers for Shiny Ribs, along with Alice Spencer. She's one of the backup singers. Also, she's got a song, cover of Refugee, Tom Petty's song, on the Friends of Sims album. And she's been singing, you know, at some of these Sims benefits and like at the Austin Music Awards this last South by Southwest. She was there singing with all the group, along with people like Charlie Sexton, Britt Daniel. All kinds of people. Anyway, we have a great conversation. I didn't know Sally very well before she came in. I've been seeing her around for years, and we finally got to sit down and talk, and I got to know her, and she is an amazing person, a great story, a fantastic hang, and a brilliant musician. So stick around for that. We'll be talking to Sally Allen for just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. Okay, look, guys, it's June 10th, and June 10th means it's time to lock in and settle on a summer jam. And I haven't done that. I've been combing the pop charts. I've been combing the dance music charts. I've been reaching out on Twitter to people like Elizabeth McQueen and Lori Gallardo. Both of them are DJs at KUTX. And my cousin Eric. I depend on him for summer jam consultations. And I haven't found one yet. I mean, I'm kind of closing in on a couple, but I haven't found one yet. And then I looked up on an almanac yesterday because I wanted to find out the actual first day of summer so that I could decide on my summer jam before the first day of summer. And it turns out that the first day of summer is next Monday, June 20th. Or, you know, the following Monday, June 20th. Well, it also happens that night we're doing our 500th podcast live at the Townsend. Yeah, Monday, June 20th. So I'm going to announce at the live podcast, I'm going to announce my summer jam. I'm going to decide on it. I don't know what your criteria is for summer jam, but mine is a light song with a good beat, usually 4 on the floor. Now, 2013, Get Lucky was my jam by Daft Punk. It was everyone's jam. I don't mind if it's everyone's. I don't have to have like some unique underground jam that nobody knows. I want to have a jam that everybody knows, that I'll hear everywhere I go in the summer. Every pool party I go to, every beach house, every boat I go on, you'll hear this song. Just like you heard Get Lucky in that summer, you know? It's not bad. You just got to lock into it. Commit to that song. That's your summer jam. You can have other sub jams, you know, like, oh yeah, that's my second best. But usually your number one summer jam is your number one summer jam, you know? Out in the Street by Spanish Gold was my 2014 summer jam. I think last year, I don't even remember what my summer jam was. It might have been So Light I Forgot It. Or maybe I never did lock in. I didn't go to any pool parties, really. I went to the beach for a week. That was great. But yeah, you got to have a summer jam. So on June 20th, Monday, at our live podcast, our 500th episode, live podcast. I will announce my summer jam. Let me tell you about this live podcast. Come on out. It's at 8 o'clock, Monday, June 20th at the Townsend right here in Austin, Texas. My guests will be Taylor Muse from Quiet Company, AJ Vallejo, Susanna Schofel, Nakia, and the great Kathy Valentine from the Blue Bonnets and the Go-Go's. So come on out to that. It's free. We're going to be having a great conversation. It's a great panel. We're going to have a lot of fun, have some signature cocktails, and join us for our 500th episode live recording at the Townsend on Monday, June 20th. I will also be announcing my summer jam that day. You know, if you are in San Antonio tonight, Friday, June 10th, Skyrocket will be playing at Sam's Burger Joint and Music Hall. Come on out. It's going to be a great show. We play at 9 o'clock. Great times out there. I love playing that place. We all love playing that place, and it's always a special show, and the crowd is fantastic, okay? So if you're not doing anything tonight, come out and do that. All right, let's talk to the great Sally Allen. She's one of the Shiny Soul Sisters from Shiny Ribs. She's got a song on Friends of Sims, Refugee, cover the great Tom Petty song, and her new album, 8-Track Sessions, absolutely brilliant, absolutely beautiful, is out now, available now. Maybe you'll find your summer jam on there. Maybe I will. SallyAllenMusic.com. Find out more about her or just sit back and enjoy our conversation. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing, and enjoy my conversation with Sally. Let's get down. That's my favorite kind of album.
Wow.
That's like someone you did you do this in your house on your own, recording it yourself, just kind of,
yeah, bent over a Shure 58, kind of, yeah, just reckoning with myself. And
Sally versus Sally. The album. It has that feeling. There was a point like in the 90s where everyone I knew had a 4-track or 8-track cassette, and everyone was passing around their stuff they were doing. Even like Fastball, The Way, the first time I ever heard that was the 4-track cassette version of it. And it got to where like I got a record deal during that time, and I hated the way records sounded that were made in studios. Like I just loved the working with shit within your reach, like in this situation, like not leaving the confines of this area until the song is finished. You know what I mean? And
totally.
Your album just reeks of that vibe, and the songs are so good, and your performances are so good, and the drum programs are so weird. They're just weird. They're unorthodox.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made kind of a deal with myself that I'd work with the 8-tracks, so I'd have only 8-tracks.
Right.
And then I had a Dr. Groove beat machine with, you know, basically a bank of old school, you know, kind of 80s out beats that I'd work with, and that would be all I'd use there.
Right.
And my Telecaster out of a Pig Nose.
Yeah.
And then Stephen Barber's piano. So I kind of in the beginning of it said, this is all I'm going to work with, and I'm going to squeeze as much as I can out of that.
So there is no bass on it.
And there's one bass track.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because most of it I was like, there's not even a bass. Unless.
Yeah, just once.
Yeah. That's cool.
So, yeah, so I just thought I'm gonna just use, you know, these textures and colors, and not really look up. And doing that instead of Infinite Possibility worked for me for this material. So it was really fun. I mean, it wasn't really even a serious approach of any kind. I was kind of giggling through it, going, "Wouldn't it be great if I actually did this?" You know, you know, and put that out, you know, into the world.
Yeah, but like as an artist, is this your first album?
No, I put out a real folky record in 1999. Okay. When I was first learning just how to sing. And then I worked out of a studio in Venice, California in 2002. And I just learned I put out a record in 2002, and it was a little more of a California kind of experience based on just who I was playing with at the time.
Who were you playing with?
I had a band that I loved, and I had gone out there just to do some promotional gigs for this woman that had liked what I was doing from CAA, and I ended up arriving at this studio called Stanley Recordings, mm-hmm. and it was a cool indie scene and a label, and the band that was there just performing on everybody's record ended up being the one that I collaborated with, and how I learned how to do beats is by being at that studio, because I had no job and I was at the studio every day. I was also kind of managing and helping, you know, with other sessions. And so I kind of breathed down the neck of the main engineer there as he made hip hop beats and all kinds of, you know, synthetic beats for people.
Right.
And I was in my mid-20s, had nothing else to do, and I just barely left that street and absorbed everything I could from there and learned a lot, mainly about engineering and beats. And the people there were taught me that it didn't matter if you're a virtuoso with anything, if you could pick something up and squeeze what you could out of it and make it sound cool, then that kind of became like a way of life for me with music. I realized, you don't have to be the best bass player in the world, but if you hear a sound and you want that on your track, go do it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's like kind of the approach I learned ethic. There.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really learned like just not to make it too deep and kind of dive in and be where you are and get it out, you know, get it out of your system so you don't, you know, hold it in for too long. So.
Yeah. And lose it. Uh-huh. Or let it morph into something that isn't as raw and real.
Yeah, and that's why I decided to put this out, because all the vocals are pretty much a first take. I was just geeking out with the actual gear, and I was just in the moment. And, you know, there's no way I could recreate the fact that I believed in that moment, you know? So I just didn't, there's barely any overdubs or anything like that. But so it was just a labor of love and a snapshot of a certain time in my life. And I thought, I really want to get this out and just have it be kind of a little bit of like a blueprint towards what I want to be making more and more rich over time. So it has a piece of electronica and it has some dirty guitars because I like rock and roll and a lot of classic rock and a lot of grungy rock.
Yeah, you actually cover a Zeppelin song on there.
Yeah, that's my favorite band of all time.
And you changed the riff. I love that. I love that you really, I hate to sound like an American Idol judge, but you really made it your own. You did, though. You know, it's your song.
Thank you. Yeah, I did change the riff. Jimmy Page does this most brilliant thing that he does on so much where the beats fold into themselves.
Yeah.
And I knew that there was no way that was going to happen. So I just kind of like pulled out another melody from it. But
that's so cool.
And I remember doing that one night. Just it was basically my version of a temper tantrum. I wanted to just do that song, you know, and it was super cathartic. And I went over to Stephen Barber's studio, and at the time, he just would let me walk into a studio and throw my microphone into his piano, and he would play one or two tracks, and that would be
it. Did he play all that weird shit in there?
He played.
God, that is so
awesome.
Oh
wait, that actually that on the Black Dog cover, that's actually Bucca Allen playing on his home piano.
I was trying.
And the other pianos are Stephen Barber.
Because that one has a thing where it is weird, but you have to be really good. You know what? You know those kind of things where like you think like anybody can, I'll just make this weird little sound and it'll happen out of nowhere. But it's really like.
That means a lot to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was fun. But I'd go over to Stephen's place and he'd just listen to it. And that's what he'd say. He goes, "You're so weird." And then he'd go, "Well, but I really want a track on this, so just throw it up." And we'd throw it up and go. We'd throw and go, you know?
Yeah.
He'd like just instinctually do what he wants. And he'd look at me kind of like nodding his head, going, you know, with all kinds of expressions, play his part. And I'd be out of there in like 30 minutes, you know? It was just nothing that we, took too seriously. And then as time passed, the material kind of started to haunt me, and I was like, this should go out. I should put this out, you know? And at first I was like, maybe this is just kind of rough. And then I thought, no. And,
didn't anybody ever go like, this will sound good when you do it in a real way.
Yeah. I mean,
'cause that drives me nuts.
I had some people listen to it that have an ear for, you know, the most polished stuff. And I know there's sense of, you know, aesthetic. And they were like, you know, I'm sorry, but I really, you know, I don't know what
I don't know what you're doing.
I'm not sure what you're doing, you know.
But how cool is that?
and so I don't know. I mean, honestly, my main response to it is I would pull up the tracks and listen to them and go, should I put this out? And I'd start cracking up and laughing and go, you know, stuff's funny. I really like it. And I realized at some point that I was going to have to put out stuff that kind of turned me on. And I was like, even if this is geeky and whatever this is, I don't know, I just really like it, so I'll put it out, you know, but in a humble way, just like, you know, this is pointing towards something I want to do. I might not have totally arrived there yet, but I want to at least start documenting the story of it. You know,
to me, that makes really exciting. Sense. Yeah. So what kind of 8-track did you use?
So it's a Tascam 8-track.
Cassette?
Kind of forget the name, the model of it. No, it's a digital one.
Okay, okay.
And then a Dr. Groove beat machine. So, and then, so the two people I just wanted to mention that, like, really made it, took it from a lo-fi place of kind of, hey, this might be a little iffy, things were kind of mushy, to actually, like, a much more clear sound was George Reef. He mixed it.
Oh, yeah.
So he
threw, he did?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So he threw everything into his Pro Tools system and reamped it, and he mixed it, and he said, don't ever do this to me again.
Like, bring him a mess.
He goes, I spent more time cleaning your tracks than I did mixing it.
Did you have, like, creaking chairs and...
all kinds of stuff. Just, like, yeah. He's like, next time, you know, I'm going to set you up so that you have a pop screen and a preamp.
Like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's like, I loved mixing it. I'm so excited about it. But, like, geez, he's like, you know, he said, you know, I'm glad you got this out of your system and you sent me these tracks as is. But next time I'm going to help you just, you know, upgrade a hair, which is my goal. I'm going to upgrade a hair.
Okay.
And then I took it to Tim at Space, Tim Jaron, and he mastered it. And when I brought it to him, a lot of the tracks were painful, like the beats hurt, you know. So he just kind of made everything really much more comforting. But those two men, like, are the main reason that I went ahead and decided that it was at least kind of record quality, if you
does it have to sound like, I can't even think of something popular, Dirk Bentley, because I saw him on the Today Show the other day.
I didn't really go into, you know, leaning towards trying to arrive at anything. I just wanted to put out the experience of it. So
that's, you know who's one of my favorite artists of all time in the world, not just people that we know, but like David. Like his 4-track
shit,
David. Like I spend
yes
I just live in those, like, home recording things. And then when he puts out, like, regular albums, I'm kind of like, it doesn't have the sweat, it doesn't have David's funk.
You know, and I learned a lot from David. I knew him a bit when I lived in, I mean, I've known him here, and I knew him a little bit when I lived in LA in Venison. And, you know, he really inspired me because I went over to his home studio and he was recording a record about bears and wanted me to sing on it. But all his stuff was there. You could see it. It was tangible.
Yeah.
And he has that energy of like, hey, I'm doing this. I'm putting this out. This is, you know, this totally matters. And here we go. Like, here's your part. Here's a microphone. We're doing it now here.
Yeah.
You know, and I those are the kind of people over time I've learned a lot from that make things accessible. That, you know, there's not a lot of forethought. It's just about
doing.
Yeah.
Just expressing.
That's how I've, you know, that's been the kind of my relationship with my self-esteem. If I'm working on something and I'm excited about it, you know, things shake out, you know. And I love getting into a studio, saving up a lot of money, or being a part of a really wonderful project with high-end gear everywhere. Don't get me wrong. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
And I've been really fortunate to be called in for sessions where, you know, there's Pro Tools running, there's Analog running, you know, there's a big budget and everything's, you know. And we've got all the time in the world. And so I just was trying to do one thing that I really believe in, is that that I try to live within my means, yeah. You know, and
as sometimes those limitations though make for this really, I don't know what about it does that. I put out an album like that, 10 years ago.
You did?
Yeah, that I did all myself. And they were demos. Like when I made them, they were demos for what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then someone told me, like a label was like, we'll put this out.
Yeah.
Because this is...
That's great.
This has that thing. And I was like, oh, but that's... I mean, everything I've done has never... Like everything I've done that sounds like this has never come out. It's always been stuff I've done later on.
Yeah.
And so it was a really liberating feeling. It's a really good feeling. Because when you listen to it, you're super proud of your records that you make in a studio and stuff. But the ones that you make like just in your own with these, you know, with like 3 microphones or 2 microphones or something, you know, it just makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, what comes to mind is like you might think you're sketching and then you circle back to it and you find some kind of particular value in it that's precious or something. Not precious, just that some kind of, I'm showing up here. Like
right.
A return to self or something. You go, wait, this actually doesn't need to be improved upon. And,
right. And there's that weird thing that some people call demo-itis.
Mm-hmm.
But right. Sometimes I'm like, well, it is tough to go into a studio and recreate. Like if you took those songs and those recordings with the band and you're like, okay, play this beat like this. And the guy would be like, no, that is weird. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know it.
Unless it was Donnie Wynn.
Donnie. Yeah, I know. I went through a period of time where I was, chipping away at this stuff.
Yeah.
And I had shared it with, I had shared it with Kyle Crusham and Charlie Sexton, who I've worked with, both of them, you know, team that they are. And I've learned so much with them by doing different sessions and stuff. But over the years, I'd share with them what I was doing. And I'd run into like Kyle, who I'm really grateful about these moments that I run into Kyle and he'd just laugh and go, you know, you should put out that 8-track stuff. And I was like trying to move on and do some other things. And he'd be like, you know, and I mean, met like 3 different occasions spaced way apart when I was still trying to figure out. And that's kind of divine intervention to me. Yeah. And he'd be like, I'm not kidding you. Put out that stuff, you know. And at that point, I was like, you know, you're right. It's kind of haunting me. But to me, as minimal as this was, it really was a massive group effort.
Sure.
Because of everybody that kind of stepped in at every step of the way to go, yeah, this is cool. Like, for some reason, this needs a life, you know? And so that was a part of the experience of having, you know, those two go, that stuff's you. And I'd go, is that true? And, you know, and I'd sit on it way too long.
Well,
I think that's true. And then so finally, it was really just super fun to go ahead and give into it and go, okay, fine,
yeah,
I'm gonna do it. And then everything completely fell into place, and including Todd Wilson doing the artwork and kind of what we came up with looks how it sounds to me. I'm super pleased with his work
kinda
on
raw.
It just kind of yeah, just white clean slate, minimal image. But yeah, so there was just, it was just it's music, but to me, it's just some good memories of some people being really supportive as I was trying to kind of get my legs in Austin musically.
It's funny because I've seen you play here and there over the years, and I would have never expected that album at all, like ever, in a million years. Like, I wouldn't have. I've seen you with an acoustic guitar and playing with some other people. Oh, by the way, you're playing with Shiny Ribs now?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
Great. Kevin was just on the other day.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
I love him, too.
Man, that Bowie thing you guys did. Golden Years?
Yeah.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. That was amazing.
That was fun. I'm a huge Bowie fan. That Bowie was my first crush.
Really?
And so when he passed, like, I was in a parking lot crying, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, I mean, no, it's okay. I think a lot of us were just like not prepared for that one soul to pass. I thought, you know, no. I immediately said no. I went through immediate denial, and I went, he's not supposed to die, you know. And
right.
I don't really perceive anybody else that way except for him, just because I just locked him in at like second grade as like the man.
Why?
I thought he was great. He was the first, his sound, his voice alone,
his
triggered
voice
in
amazing.
Me the sensations of, well, what is this? I'm a girl. He's a boy. I'm getting nervous. I like that feeling, you know? And that was my first moment of like, I didn't have the verbiage for it, but of what I knew to be sensual.
Do you remember
was
what
David
song
Bowie's?
It
was China Girl.
Oh,
I was
wow.
in the back of a Bonneville. You know, I have like a real vivid experience.
Wow.
Yeah, but let's see. Why do we? Oh, Golden Years.
Yeah.
So no, covering that is great. Just
that seems like it would be
so
a fun
much...
thing to do. Kevin's great. Alice is amazing.
She's
must be
amazing.
Fun hanging out with her.
Yeah, she's amazing. I've learned a lot from Alice.
It's fun. Do you guys you travel with them and everything,
mm-hmm.
and it's it must be a nice. It's fun to be a front person with all the stuff, but it's also nice to go out without the responsibility of being Kevin Russell.
Mm-hmm.
But getting to getting to play the show.
Yeah, I
and
love
hang out with everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love being a part of it. It's a musical family, and we all need that. We all want to, you know. I believe we all like to, you know, do our what we. Tell ourselves this is my music over here, but you know, my even makes me laugh, you know,
right.
But I love to be a part of music from the perspective of a supportive role.
I love
singing harmonies. It's one of my favorite things to do.
You seem to do that a lot.
I love it. Yeah. It makes me so happy.
Yeah.
It's just fun to, there's something about it that's super cathartic just to be in the mix, throwing in, you know, something that's feels kind of like it's adding and embellishing. But I love watching Kevin shine. His voice is incredible, and I've rarely seen what he does, which is it doesn't matter where he is, he consistently gives the same amount of himself no matter where it is.
Yeah.
And so that kind of dedication, and it's like he's got his ego in his back pocket, but it's not leading the way at all, you know.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's really cool. So I learn a lot from him, and there's a lot to be learned kind of flanked over to the left or right of someone, and just helping you know, raise up their voice.
Yeah,
it's a real privilege.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I was mentioning Charlie and Kyle, I've gotten to come in on some sessions they've done, and Charlie's taught me a lot about the skill of that, you know.
Yeah.
Walking into situation.
It is a skill.
And realizing that you've got to bring a particular tone, and it's not about your voice anymore. It's more about like, what does the song require?
Right.
And then making that happen physically.
Yeah.
You know, becoming, maybe you'll be asked to become someone else, or maybe you'll be asked to emulate that person. I got a huge honor to play with someone, to sing with someone that I've loved through the years, that I was a massive fan of, and that was to sing on Edie Raquel's last record.
Oh, wow.
With those guys. And we're just hearing some of the new mixes are coming in, and I'm really loving them.
When is that album coming
but
out?
But Charlie would, you know, taught me a lot about exactly what he heard.
Right.
That she was going to require for those songs, I learned a ton just in that a couple of days with those guys.
Did you grow up like on them, like with that Shooting Rubber Bands at the Stars album?
Yeah, I mean, I would be at Club Dada in Dallas warming up for like an open mic or something, shaking with my guitar trying to figure out what I was doing when I was like 20. And Edie Raquel and the New Bohemians would be warming up outside, you know, in the big area. I don't know if you remember that club.
Totally.
I mean, I grew up in that one.
You were playing the inside?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know, like Beard and, right?
It was Tom Prejean's open mic that I'd go to.
Right.
And then I started getting some gigs there.
But Beard was the guy the door guy.
Yeah.
The weird guy with the beard.
Yes.
Which is really insane. And he was bald.
You're
from Dallas?
So I'm from St. Louis, but I started playing music out in Fort Worth and Dallas in my 20s.
All right. So that...
I mean, you know, just shows and stuff.
Okay. And that's where the Bohemians were doing their thing at Dada then? Like that was the magic time, like 10 hands.
And it was awesome. And they were doing that a little bit earlier than that, but yeah. It's interesting, when I was moving to Austin in 2005, I didn't know anyone here, and I'd come to Austin to play music. I'd been in LA and I'd been in Brooklyn for a year, and I decided I've got to find a place that I can have some dignity, look everybody in the eye, and play music until I grow old.
Wait, what happened? Just, oh, so just, you, because in Brooklyn, you kind of have to be 23.
And, you know, and, yeah, I just want to learn my craft. I want to really get good at it. And I want the environment and the weather to be easy on my body. And
yeah.
Anyway, so I got here, and when I was driving into town, I had Edie Brickell's Volcano record in my car. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. I was like, God, this is just, you know, I just loved it.
Little did you know, a decade later, you'd be singing.
Yeah. So wow. It's really cool. She's, you know, she's just an amazing woman. And I love the sound of her voice and the ease that she brings with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I learned a lot just by being in her presence, because that kind of ease you hear vocally, she completely embodies
that.
Every day. Yeah.
She cool?
Oh, God. She's amazing. Yeah. And,
She's in a band with Steve Martin, and she's married to Paul Simon.
I know.
Just, I mean, and she's Edie Brickell, but, like, how cool is that?
That's she's groovy.
Awesome.
She's
just groovy. She's very groovy.
She's just totally, yeah.
You did that Friends of Sims album, you did Refugee.
Mm-hmm. Right?
How did you get to do that? Be friends with Kyle?
I had been drawn to that song over the last year. I had gone through some dark stuff, and that song just was, you know, sometimes I'll attach to a song that helps me to you know, deal with getting through a hard time, and that particular song I had gravitated to. So every time I felt it, I just felt better. Every time I played it, I felt better.
I know those kind of songs.
And you know, the kind you, yeah, normally they're cover songs.
Not ones that you wrote, but one you, all of a sudden you like hear it when you're going through the thing, and it's a song you've heard 1,000 times, all of a sudden you're like,
oh my
God.
Wait
a minute.
Yeah. Oh my God, I must.
I'm right there.
Exactly. So I got really into that song, and I had to just recover from some hard things that had kicked in, and Kyle had asked me to play on a song called War of Man, so I had gone in to work on that Sims CD with him on that song, and we were on the phone, he had sent me the mix, and we were talking about that, and I was like, I love it, it's great, I really like that. And anyway, we were talking about the CD, and I was just into his production style. He was, everything I was hearing from the record, I was just loving. And it was rock and roll. The record to me, you know, most of it was just high energy and rockin'. And like I was saying, Led Zeppelin's one of my favorite bands. And I feel like I'm excited about music right now, because I'm just kind of looking up and becoming more productive and getting to play more.
And, well, I mean, and I started you've been to raising want... a child, and you know, you get through the I guess what are the where there's yeah. nothing but that
yeah.
happening in your life, and then after a while, you know,
yeah,
kids can do stuff.
Exactly,
you don't need to be carrying them.
Yeah, Crew is 6 now.
Wow.
And I knew when he was an infant, I was like, okay, I'm going in. It's these first 3 years are the years to build his foundation. I'm going to just be here.
Yeah.
And I did shelf some of my music for a while, and I, you know, willingly did it. And then right now is that period where a lot of women go through, where they start looking up, and, you know, I call it like a return to self, that, you know, and your body's your own again.
Right.
You're not sharing it. Yeah, and then yeah. that's when my hormones actually changed. So I wanted to play music again. Cause when Crew was really little, I went through a really bizarre, unexpected primal, like, just, I wasn't interested in being in even large groups of people. I was just interested in holding my baby and taking care of him. And my creative life really changed. It was very strange. And now I'm like, I can't get enough.
Yeah.
You know, music or...
What does that feel like? I've never talked to anyone about that.
Yeah.
Like when those instincts take over and you have no control, you become the animal within.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not not Sally that you would see out from time to time.
Yeah. I think it's part of how we're designed. I didn't see it coming. You know, I hadn't talked about it a lot with other people, you know, but yeah, I mean, I was the particular, you know, mama, you know, animal that just, once I was pregnant and he was with me, I felt pretty protective and more spiraled in. And that was, I think, a chemical response to, you know, hey, you've got this child, and it's a way to keep that child alive, you know?
Yeah. Were you cognizant of it while it was happening?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I just was like, oh, well, that's weird. I don't want to perform out, you know. And I had been on a stage one time when I was pregnant, and I was mortified. I was like, I felt like I shouldn't, like I might be in possible danger, which is not true. Sounds a little psychotic. But, I mean, my system was like, something's wrong. There's too many people here. I'm way too exposed. There's a baby here, you know. I don't know. It's just like,
I love that though.
Yeah.
I love that you were
really awkward.
Like you weren't weird to yourself about it. You know,
yeah,
you gave yourself a break and got what was happening.
Yeah, I was like, this is hormonal.
Were you ever scared it was never going to end?
Yeah.
Like you were going to be walking him to high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have that feeling.
Yeah, where I'd be kids. The helicopter mom where the kid was like, leave me alone, and they're 19 or something.
I feel like if I had kids, I swear to God, I feel like if I had kids, like they would be in like junior high, and they'd look at the little window of the door, and I'd be like standing there. Like,
yeah, they're looking through the window.
Yeah, like a freak.
I did do that in primary. I would drop him off and look through the window.
That
but
is
he
so
was,
funny.
He was two or three.
Do you hang out with other moms who rock?
Who rock? Let's see.
There's, you know, like...
Alice.
Oh, Jazz.
I mean, Alice is like...
Didn't you do some stuff with Jazz?
I didn't do anything with Jazz.
Oh, no,
I know
no.
Jazz.
Sorry, I read two different things today about people.
I mean, Alice comes to mind. I mean, she's like a sister at this point. And, And she's got two girls. And she's, you know, been in a lot of awesome bands, and so I really lean on her a little bit. You know, we compare notes as mothers and as musicians too. There's a lot to be learned from Alice, and but yeah, I mean, I'll she's
That's
just really grounded.
Alice.
She's super grounded, and yet she's very adventurous and really, really talented, and she's just got a lot of knowledge about music. But she also, as far as you know, traveling goes and stuff, she knows how to do that skill of traveling with a band, you know, making sure needs are met, and she just knows how to be professional but also have a really good time, and then we'll, you know, get to talk about the kids and transitioning back at home when it's time to, you know, lock into your kids when you're home. So yeah, she's a mom and she rocks.
Does Crew like your album?
Kinda, actually. Yeah, I had it in the car when I was listening to mixes, and he liked the beats and stuff. But when he was little, and he still does this, if I sing really loud around him, especially in the car, he just screams no, you know. Or if he comes to a gig, he's not too interested. I don't know. It's just he's not. He's not like, mom, sing. I think he just kind of thinks, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just always been around him. I don't think he's known different. There's always been just tons of music around him. But.
Yeah, Jesus. And art and shit. Like, it's just raining on that poor kid.
It is.
He's going to end up wanting to be like a lawyer or like an accountant or something.
Yeah. Everyone's expressing themselves. Yeah. I'm over it.
No. you did the Austin Music Awards. Did you sing with Robert Plant there? Did you meet him?
Yeah, I met Robert Plant, which was huge.
What was that like? What happens when you meet Robert Plant, Sally?
Oh, wow.
Is there like a string quartet that's behind him?
I knew he was going to be performing that night.
Sure.
And I knew that he was, you know, one of my favorite musicians of all time. And, you know, of course, and I didn't want to push myself on him at all.
Right.
So I thought, you know, if the timing's right, I'd love to meet him. And if it's not, it's not. And I had just performed with the Sims Project, which we were going to talk more about that. I'm sorry, I kind of changed the subject.
I will go back to it.
But that was great. That was a high point. I felt like the section of the Music Awards really came together. That was this, the Sims section.
Yeah.
And so I was, we had just done Moon Age Daydream.
Yeah.
With
I love that
everybody. And I had a gig with Shiny Ribs to do at the Saxon Pub like 30 minutes later, and I had just discovered Lyft. You know, and Uber was still happening. And I was running down a hallway, and then to my right was Robert Plant and Jimmy Vaughn and Todd Wolfson and Mickey, and, you know, it was
what just a strange group.
And they were all kind of standing there. They were really quiet, and right. Robert was getting his guitar tuned. He was just kind of one leg up on a chair, tuning his guitar with his ear really close to the neck of his guitar. I turned the corner, I looked at him out of the corner of my eye, and I went like this. my mouth literally dropped open,
right.
And I just kind of stared, and I stood there, and he looked up, and he goes, "Hello," and I went, and I just froze, and I just looked him in the eyes, and I went, "Hi," and I thought, should I move forward, should I leave, should I move forward, should I leave, you know, and he beckoned, he goes, "Yeah, come here."
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I was like, oh, green light, you know. So I put out my hands and I just said, like I was about seven, I said,
yeah.
"My name is Sally Allen and it is a pleasure to meet you." You know, like the most like articulate I've ever been in my life. You know, and I was just in bliss. I just looked him in the eyes and I couldn't believe it. He was so generous. You know, he looked me in the eyes too and was really present. And I know he's done that with thousands of people, but it was really great. And Todd was standing right there and he took a snapshot of it.
Oh, so you have,
so it's documented
yeah.
that it did happen. Not my imagination.
What'd you tell your Lyft guy when you got in the car?
Oh.
Like, oh my God, I got to get the Saxon Pop. I'm sweating. I just met Robert Plant.
Yeah,
did you say that to him?
Yeah, pretty much. And he got me there in time. And I was like 10 minutes later, I was performing with Kevin. It was a really great night. And I was honored to be there. And that, you know, just circling back, the whole reason that I was there was
Sims.
Because of the Sims Project,
yeah.
Which I'm, you know, can't say enough good things about the Sims Foundation. They've helped me out directly.
Me too. Directly, totally. And that day I was going to go to those awards, but I had hosted their South by San Jose Day.
Oh, cool.
Like all day, like from, not, I'm not making a face, but like, you know, 12 to 8, I was outside in the thing. And when I came home
you
to
were
change,
shot.
I smelled bad and everything. I came home to shower and stuff. I was like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. South by, there's just so much going on.
Yeah. It's a great organization.
It's great.
And I actually had them all in here, like Jennifer and, why am I drawing a blank on her name? Who runs it?
Heather.
Mm-hmm. And Kyle, all when that album came out, mm-hmm. to talk about the making of that album.
Very
they all
cool.
loved your track.
Yeah.
And I saw you play that actually a couple of months ago.
Was it?
I saw you play it at Todd Wolfson's Monkey Nest
oh,
show.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Weren't you on a couple months
mm-hmm.
ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the Sims Foundation is I've leaned on in the last couple of years. There's been a lot of transitions in my life, and so I'm just very, very grateful that they come together for so many people, and that I've been one of those people. And to be a part of the record doesn't even really come close to the kind of giving back that I'd want to do,
right.
You know. But at least I saw that as an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And Kyle was just knocking it out of the ballpark, just as far as his
he did a
gathering
great job
of people,
with that record, yeah.
His producing of the record, and just putting his you know, his energy into every song, to me made it just I just love his style, you know. And so I asked him if he would want to do Refugee, and which I thought was a little audacious. I don't know why. It just kind of flew out of my mouth.
Oh, you asked?
Yeah. It just kind of flew out of my mouth. I was like, I should do Refugee, you know, and it was a little like awkward. And he was like, huh, you know, let me think about it. You know, and then I was like, I don't know, just offering, you know, but he did think about it. And at one point, he was like, why don't you just play a verse for me? Let me see what the heck you're doing, you know? And I played him a verse of it. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so then we ended up doing that song. And it ended up being just really cathartic and healing to do that song. I love it. And, I'm glad we didn't think about it too much because it's hard, you know, I think a tough one to cover.
Yeah.
Because it's so...
They
awesome.
Had a hard time recording. Did you ever see the making of Damn the Torpedoes? Oh, there's a real funny... they had a hard time recording that song.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know that.
They made themselves have a hard time recording that song. Trying to make the most perfect song ever. And then there's this... They talk about... why am I drawing a blank on everyone's name? What's the guy that's... Jim Keltner. We're like roaming the hallways of the studio, and Tom Petty came out at one point. He was walking around with the shaker, and he was like, you know, you should put this on there. And then they had him play shaker on it. And now when I hear that song, all I hear is that shaker.
Really? I don't know. I didn't know there was a shaker on it.
You will now.
Well,
not yours, but his.
Yeah. I'll have to listen to it again. Kyle said he had thought about doing that song for the record, and it had passed through his mind as a thought. And then, and then when I brought it up, he went, oh, and that made him pause, you know, and think about it.
Yeah.
And we were both talking about, you know, the video for a Refugee, right?
Oh.
Where he's, you know, sort of rolling on the wall, and then he's just so in your face and so confident and awesome.
Yeah.
And it looks like the band could do that song in their sleep the way that they're performing it, you know. Like, I didn't realize they labored over it. It seems like that song just was always, you know, they make it look like breathing,
they do make
right?
it look easy, yeah.
But we talked about how great the video was, you know, and just, I mean, how much you love Tom in that video.
Yeah.
And all he's doing is just basically rolling around on a brick wall, right?
Yeah.
But you think to yourself, why didn't I think about that? That's great. It's simple. Yeah. You know, he's just being himself.
You made a nice video with Todd.
We did. We hung out. Yeah.
Where do people find that? On YouTube? Is it on your website?
Yeah, the song is called Forever Trip, and it's a YouTube now. And so I guess you would just Google Sally Allen Forever Trip.
Okay. There's some good videos. There's that video of you, I think, and Charlie and Bucca playing on your website. Did I see that?
That's in Denmark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What happened there? Why'd you go there?
So Charlie...
How's the songs?
Kind of. Charlie had had me sing on a record with him, and that's another session that I learned a ton about singing through Charlie, as he taught, you know, just kind of was a great vocal coach through that. But there's a Danish artist named Paul Krebs, who's from Aarhus, Denmark, and they've been friends for a long, long time. And Paul came to the United States, to Austin, to work with Charlie to do his first English record.
Uh-huh.
So I sang harmonies on Paul Krebs' record. And then he asked me to come and perform an Aarhus Music Festival with him in 2011. And I sang harmonies on all those shows of Paul's. And then Paul, at that particular night at this great theater, it was one of my favorite memories of my whole life. He asked me to sing one song, so I did. And it was great. I felt a real connection with the Danish people. And
are you some kind of Scandinavian princess?
I'm Irish and Norwegian.
Okay.
So I was close to my bloodline there.
Yeah.
You know, I could feel it too. But that was a great night. And Paul was generous to say, hey, sing a song. So I sang a song. And honest to God, I had kind of an out-of-body experience that night, and it happened to be videotaped. You know, it was like...
How awesome.
It was neat. I felt so connected to the audience that I kind of watched the song happen from above. It was very strange, but to me, I just... What I make of that is that something about the the audience was so powerful that night. Have you ever felt like that?
Yeah.
Where the song sings itself because you feel like you're being supported or something. Yeah. That's what the Danish crowd made me feel like. And Charlie was there.
Yeah.
And Paul and Bucca and Claudia, a beautiful Norwegian songwriter. But that was a real high point that night. Like that day is kind of embedded in my memory as a massive gift. So really transcendent.
Do you write with people?
I haven't written a lot with other people. I'd like to, though. I'm now that I've done this project, and of course it's so
personal,
you know, spiraled in.
Yeah.
The irony is, like, as soon as I got that out and about, like, I just started really wanting to collaborate with others. I'd like to do a rock and roll record, you know, kind of like in the vein of where that refugee stuff was sounding.
Yeah.
I think that's what's next, is just to start collaborating more and more.
Okay. Where are you at with, like, a next record? You're not, like, prepared.
Well, I started writing some new songs, still doing the same thing, making beats and playing on my Telecaster and stuff. But I like, kind of like what I was telling you George talked to me about, I'd like to kind of upgrade as far as how I record that stuff. And I don't know, I'm going to try to sort of richen that sound a bit, and then mix it in with a four-piece band kind of rock direction. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Totally.
But I can hear it. But I'd like to try to get this record out into the world a little bit and do some shows to where I can perform this material.
I was going
to
ask you, would you perform these shows with Dr. Beat and your Telecaster and Pig Nose?
What I think I'll do is I'll take the tracks themselves and make them into performance tracks minus the lead vocal and the lead guitar, and like play to the actual recording, you know, live, and then have some people sit in to add something maybe different.
Yeah.
You know, maybe someone to play some sub basses or basically just kind of try to transplant the actual record onto a stage and press play.
And just like stand there and like do some interpretive dances.
Just have it sound exact, have it actually be the exact tracks. I'd like to do that. You know, kind of like the electronica folks do sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What you see, but recreating it, I think, would be kind of, you know, just completely recreating it. I don't think I'm going to do that.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering how you would do that live, because I've seen you play, and then I've been into the record. And people,
they can get it
at Waterloo. There's physical copies.
Yeah.
They can find it at the show. Are you on streaming platforms such as Spotify?
Yes. So okay. I just got, we talked about this, a TuneCore account.
Oh, good.
And so, I don't know if anyone's familiar with TuneCore. It's, it basically makes your music available on most of the digital music sites. So iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, it should be up and available pretty much now.
Okay.
So, but yeah, the physical copy of the CD I've got on my, I'll have it shows, and it's at Waterloo, and, I'll keep doing, start doing some, you know, Facebook related posts about the record. And, you know, I'm going to probably do another video or something soon, but so I want to give this record a little bit of time, you know?
Yeah. Records like this to me, records like this get passed around by like, oh shit, have you heard Sally's thing? No, check
really
this out,
sweet.
Dude. You know what I mean?
Thanks, Johnny. That's super sweet.
It's a gorgeous record. People can find your stuff at sallyallenmusic.com, and then Facebook, your Sally Allen Music as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Sally Allen. Sally. That's your name? Is Sally just a name, or is it short for something?
That's the name I was given.
I've never known that.
That's the name I was given. Yeah. Sally is my name that
it's
I've had
a great
all my whole
name.
Life. Thank you. I really like it.
I like it too. It seems like a name that isn't around as much as it used to be.
Yeah.
There's more apples.
I know. I was adopted when I was a baby.
Really?
My mom. Mm-hmm. And my mom had a doll named Sally, and she just knew if I have a girl someday and I get to have a baby, I want to name her Sally. So I've loved it my whole life. I've got a cousin within that my family that her mom had a doll named Susie and named her Susie, and it was just that simple. Wow. But I've always felt like, oh, that was, you know, that was meant to be my name. So
where did the name Crew come from?
So Crew is an interesting story. Bucca's name, Crew's dad, Bucca, he was named after a Delta Slide guitar player named Bucca White.
Okay.
But that's as far as the research he had gone around that name. But he was touring, I forget which band, I think it was a Bodine's tour he was about to go on, and he was on the phone with an American Airlines representative that said, I know where, you know, your name came from. Do you know? And he said, well, yeah, Bucca White. And she said, no, it's a Liberian name. Bucca is sort of like a command that you say to someone that means chill out.
Oh, really?
In Liberia. And she said, yeah, and the entire culture and the entire dialect, the language is called crew. So there's a crew people that speak a crew language, and Bucca happens to be a part of that language.
Wow.
A word
that's cool.
In that. Yeah. So, I was like pregnant out to here, and we still didn't have a name for a crew, and that name just kind of flew in, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted just, a one syllable name, 'cause I knew this baby was going to be, you know, strong and a boy, and that I was going to need to just throw his name out into the air quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to have to wrap my mouth around like four syllables.
Right.
You know?
Timothy.
Yeah. Yeah. Emmanuel. You know,
Emmanuel.
I wanted to just be like, hey, Crew. And and sure enough, like, it's been, he's a one syllable, you know?
He's a one syllable guy.
But yeah.
You're going to be touring with Shiny Ribs this summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might be playing some shows on your own.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Anything else we should look for? Any kind of like,
well,
Plant, you guys going to do a show together?
With Robert?
Yeah.
You know, God, fingers crossed someday.
He likes to sing with a lady now.
He does?
Yeah, he'd have the Alison Krauss thing and then the Patty Griffin. And
Well, yeah, so what's coming is, yeah, I'm a part of the Shiny Ribs is my family band. I love them. So I'm in for the long haul. We're going to put out a new record soon that I'm really, really proud of. And we recorded it out at Sugar Hill. Mm-hmm. It's all live. It's called I've Got Your Medicine. And so I'm going to continue just trying to perform this 8-track session stuff. And I'm just looking for what kind of venue would be right for some nerdy electronica stuff, you know?
You know what's a good room?
What?
For what you would, exactly what you want to do, the Townsend?
Oh, yeah.
Because I love the Townsend. It's also not size intimidating. Like, I got to get 300 people in there. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. I'm glad you said that, because I've been like, okay, I need to, if I can envision it, I can normally make something happen, but I've been like, where would this stuff?
Got good sound too,
okay.
And a good board. And, yeah.
Right on. Yeah. So the Townsend. Okay. I'm going to get a gig at the Townsend.
All right.
And
I'll help you.
Do some, like 5 tracks from this record on there, the ones with the beats on it. And then Edie's stuff's coming out. So I hope people will look for that too. To me, she sounds better than ever. I don't know exactly when that release date will be, but the mixes are getting done. And so, yeah, I feel really grateful. I've got a lot of irons in the fire, and like we were saying, and right now I just can't get enough of music, and just really inspired. Just trying to figure out how to balance it all is kind of my main question.
Well, you can do it.
Yeah. And I teach too. I teach voice
I
at
saw
Space.
That. Oh, it's voice that you teach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Space Rehearsal on Menchaca. I love that place.
Sponsors of the show.
That's like a big home. Are they really?
Yeah.
Hi, Space. Yeah, I love that place. I've got a teaching room, room 14, yo.
Nice.
and you guys are there.
We have a room up there.
Y'all are there. We're neighbors.
Do you hear, like, 4 hours of Iran by Flock of Seagulls and stuff like that.
Sometimes I think I'm hearing y'all, but that's funny.
There's there's a distinct thing. Like if it's like Rhinestone Cowboy, it's us.
Really? Ah. Yeah, we're there. We're probably there at the same time on.
Yeah, we're there Wednesdays, like 11 to 2.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sally, you made a beautiful album. Everyone should get it. It's called 8-Track Sessions. It's absolutely gorgeous. 9 songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can I tell you something that happened? I know. You can't see it now because they walked by. Earlier, there was a girl standing there, and I was like,
are you serious?
That's one of my ex-wife's best friends.
Standing in the window behind me?
Yeah.
During this conversation.
And her dog was being... She wasn't looking at me. She was just standing out there doing it, and I was like, oh, so she must live here. So that's a thing. So wow. And I just saw her walk by, so it was confirmed by the second walk by. Unless she's just seeing a dude here and brings her dog for the sleepovers. So hey man, the album's called 8-Track Sessions. It's absolutely gorgeous. SallyAllenMusic.com, or if you live in Austin, go to Waterloo Records or find out where she's playing. Pick up the Friends of Sims album. Her brilliant version of Refugee is on there. And go see Shiny Ribs.
Yay.
You can find them at shinyribs.org.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Johnny. Bye. This is a real honor. Thank you.
That's Sally Allen. Her album, 8-Track Sessions, is available now. You can find it at iTunes, on Spotify, at Waterloo Records in Austin. Go to SallyAllenMusic.com to find out more about Sally. You can also see her as one of the Shiny Soul Sisters in Shiny Ribs, along with my pal, Alice Spencer. All right, a great, great getting to know Sally Allen. Fantastic artist. All right, when you're out there checking out Sally Allen and you're looking her up on iTunes, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher, which allows you to stream podcasts, not fill up your phone and your phone's memory with a bunch of shows. You can just go to Stitcher.com or find it in your app store, download it for free, and over 30,000 shows are at your disposal. All right? Thank you for listening to the show. I want to thank Sally for coming by. We're going to hear a song called Forever Trip from her album, 8-Track Sessions. This album, this song, Forever Trip, also has a video that was made by my friend Todd Wolfson. Great dude. Great video. You can find it at SallyAllenMusic.com. Enjoy Forever Trip. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing, however it is you're listening to this show. Let's get down.
Flashbacks of the forever trip every night.